The Columbia Workshop. Tonight, the Columbia Broadcasting System announces the appointment of William N. Robeson as permanent director of the Columbia Workshop. In keeping with the holiday spirit, Mr. Robeson presents as the first in a new series of workshop productions, part one of his own radio extraction of Lewis Carroll's immortal classic, Alice's Adventures Through the Looking Glass, with an experimental musical score specially composed for this broadcast by Paul Sterrett and Leif Stevens.
Child of a pure, unclouded brow, and dreaming eyes of wonder, though time be fleet, and I and thou are half a life asunder, thy loving smile will surely hail this new-dyed gift of a fairy tale. Without, the frost, the blinding snow, the storm wind's moody madness. Within, the firelight's ruddy glow, and childhood's nest of gladness. Come, take this gift from out the past. Come with Alice through the looking glass. Alice sat drowsily in the great armchair as the snowflakes fell gently against the windowpane. Just as if they were kissing it, Alice thought. The black kitten, lying in her lap, purred in the warmth of a fire. And sleepily, Alice wondered.
Kitty, can you play chess? Now, don't smile. I'm asking it seriously. Because when Sister and I were playing a little while ago, you watched just as if you understood. And when I said chess, you purred. Well, it was a nice check, Kitty. And really, I might have won if it hadn't been for that nasty knife that came wriggling down among my pieces. Kitty, dear, let's pretend that you're the Red Queen. Oh, yes, you do know who the Red Queen is. She's one of my chessmen. I'm sure if you sat up and folded your arms, you'd look exactly like her. Now, do try it.
But the kitten wouldn't try. So to punish it, Alice held it up to the looking glass so it might see how tufty it was.
And if you're not good directly, I'll put you through the mirror into Looking Glass House. How would you like that? Very well, then. Mind your manners. And now, if you'll attend and not talk so much, I'll tell you my ideas about Looking Glass House. First, there's the room you can see through the glass. That's just the same as our drawing room. Only the things go the other way. The books are something like our books, too. Only the words go the wrong way. I know that because I've held up one of our books to the glass. And then they hold up one in the other room. And, Kitten, you can just see a little peep of the passage in Looking Glass House if you leave the door of our drawing room wide open. And it's very like our passage, as far as you can see. Only you don't know. It may be quite different beyond. There must be a garden and, oh, so many lovely things. Oh, Kitty, how nice it could be if we could get through into Looking Glass House. Let's pretend there's a way of getting through somehow, Kitty. Let's pretend the glass has got all soft like gauze, so that we can get through. Why, I declare, it's turning into a sort of mist. It'll be easy enough to get through now.
Certainly the glass was beginning to melt away, just like a bright, silvery mist. In a moment, Alice was up on the mantelpiece, through the glass, and had jumped lightly down into the looking glass room.
Oh, why they don't keep this room so tidy as the other, or the chessmen spilled among the cinders on the hearth. But they're moving. They've come to life. The Red King and the Red Queen. And there are the White King and the White Queen sitting on the edge of the shovel. And here are two castles walking arm in arm.
But Alice was too experienced a Wonderland traveler to marvel much at the chessmen come to life. And she quickly ran through Looking Glass House, searching for the garden. When she came to the stairs, she discovered a new invention for getting down quickly. She just kept the tips of her fingers on the handrail and floated. Look, she jumped.
Tickets, please. Have your tickets ready. Yes, thank you, thank you, thank you. Now. Well, then, show your ticket, child.
Don't keep him waiting, child. His time is worth 1,000 pounds a minute.
I'm afraid I haven't got a ticket. There wasn't a ticket office where I came from.
There wasn't room for one where she came from. There the land is worth 1,000 pounds a minute.
Don't make excuses. You should have bought one from the engine driver.
The engine driver? His smoke is worth 1,000 pounds a pop?
Alice thought to herself that there was no use in answering such nonsense. So the voices didn't answer her this time, although to her great surprise, they thought in chorus. I hope you understand what this is like, but I'm sure I don't. All the time the passengers joined in silent unison, the train guard was looking at Alice, first through a telescope, then through a microscope, and then through opera glasses. At last he said,
"You are traveling the wrong way."
Alice's traveling companions were a queer group. There was a gentleman sitting opposite her dressed in white paper, and next to him, a goat wearing eyeglasses, and next to the goat, a beetle. There were others, too, but Alice couldn't see them because the carriage was so dark.
So young a child ought to know which way she's going, even if she doesn't know her own name.
Bah! She ought to know her way to the ticket office, even if she doesn't know her alphabet.
She'll have to go back from here as luggage.
Change engines at me.
That sounds like a horse.
You might make a joke on that. Something about horse and sore throat, you know.
He must be labeled last with care, you know.
She must go by post. Say she's got a head on her.
She must be sent as a message by telegraph.
She must draw the train the rest of the way.
Never mind what they all say, my dear. But take a return ticket every time the train stops.
Indeed, I shan't. I don't belong to this railway journey at all. I was in a wood just now, and I don't know how I got there. And I wish I were back there.
You might make a joke on that. Something about you would if you could, you know.
Don't tease so. If you're so anxious to have a joke made, why don't you make one yourself?
I am an insect.
What kind of an insect?
What? And you don't like insects? Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Nothing to get upset about. Nothing at all. Just a brook. We have to jump over.
I scarcely like the idea of a jumping train.
Nothing to worry about, child.
Well, it will take us into the fourth square, and that's some comfort.
So hold on, everyone. Stop!
Alice felt the carriage rise straight up into the air, and in her fright she caught hold of the goat's beard. But the beard melted away as she touched it, and she found herself sitting in the middle of a wood. A few feet away, standing motionless, were two fat little men, each with his arm around the other's neck. It was evident at once which was which,
For one had the word dumb embroidered on his collar, and the other the word D.
Tweedle's dumb and Tweedle's D. I suppose the word Tweedle's embroidered around the back of their collar. My, how they stare. It's scarcely polite.
If you think we're waxworks, you ought to pay, you know. Waxworks weren't made to be looked at for nothing. No, how? Contrarywise, if you think we're alive, you ought to speak.
I'm sure I'm very sorry.
I know what you're thinking about.
So do I.
What?
That horrid song.
Tweedledum and Tweedledee agreed to have a battle. For Tweedledum said Tweedledee had spoiled his nice new rattle. Just then flew down a monstrous crow, as black as a tar barrel, which frightened both the heroes so they quite forgot their quarrel.
Now that's what you was thinking about, weren't it?
Well, yes.
It isn't so, no how.
Contrarywise, if it was so, it might be. And if it were so, it would be. But if it isn't, it ain't. That's logic.
They look so exactly like a couple of big schoolboys. First boy.
No, how?
Next boy.
Contrarywise.
You've begun wrong. The first thing in a school visit is to say, how do you do? Shake hands.
As the two brothers were hugging each other, they held out the two hands that were free to shake hands with Alice. Alice didn't want to shake hands with either of them first for fear of hurting the other's feelings. So she took hold of both their hands at once. And immediately, the three of them started dancing round and round in a ring and singing...
Here we go round the mulberry bush, the mulberry bush, the mulberry bush. Here we go round the mulberry bush, so early in the morning. Here we go round the mulberry bush, the mulberry bush, the mulberry bush.
I don't want to dance no more, no.
Contrarywise, four times round is enough for one dance.
I hope you're not much tired.
No, how? And thank you very much for asking.
So much obliged. Do you like poetry?
Yes, pretty well. Some poetry. But now perhaps you can tell me which road leads out of the woods.
What shall I repeat to her?
The walrus and the carpenter is the longest.
If it's very long, would you please tell me first which road...
It sounds worse if you sing it.
Contrarywise, it couldn't sound worse if I sang it. The sun was shining on the sea, shining with all his might. He did his very best to make the billows smooth and bright. And this was odd, because it was the middle of the night. The moon was shining sulkily, because she thought the sun had got no business to be there after the day was done.
It's very rude of him,
she said,
to come and spoil the fun.
The walrus and the carpenter were walking close at hand. They wept like anything to see such quantities of sand.
If this were only cleared away,
they said,
it would be grand. If seven maids with seven mops swept it for half a year, do you suppose...
The walrus said.
...that they could get it cleared?
I doubt it,
said the carpenter, and shed a bitter tear.
Oysters, come and walk with us.
The walrus did beseech.
A pleasant walk, a pleasant talk. Along the briny beach. We cannot do with more than four to give a hand to each.
The eldest oyster looked at him, but never a word he said. The eldest oyster winked his eye and shook his heavy head, meaning to say he did not choose to leave the oyster bed. But four young oysters hurried up, all eager for the treat. Their coats were brushed, their faces washed, their shoes were clean and neat. And this was odd because, you know, they hadn't any feet. Four other oysters followed them, and yet another four, and thick and fast they came at last, and more and more and more, all hopping through the frothy waves and scrambling to the shore.
The time has come,
the walrus said,
to talk of many things, of shoes and ships and sealy wax, of cabbages and kings, and why the sea is boiling hot, and whether pigs have wings.
The oysters cried.
Keep going, our chap.
No hurry,
said the carpenter. They thanked him much for that.
A loaf of bread,
the walrus said,
is what we chiefly need. Pepper and vinegar besides are very good indeed. Now, if you're ready, oysters dear, we can begin to feed.
No, 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 The oyster's cry is turning a little blue.
Night is fine.
The walrus said.
You admire the view. It was so nice of you to come. And you are very nice.
The carpenter said nothing, but...
Cut us another slice. I wish you were not quite so deaf. I've had to ask you twice.
It seems a shame.
The walrus said.
To play them such a trick. After we brought them out so far. And made them trot so quick.
The carpenter said nothing. Oh, but...
The butter spread, you think?
I weep for you.
The walrus said.
I deeply sympathize.
With sobs and tears, he sorted out those of the larger size, holding his pocket handkerchief before his streaming eyes.
Oh, oysters,
said the carpenter.
You've had a pleasant run. Shall we be trotting home again?
But answer came there none. And this was scarcely odd, because they'd eaten everyone.
I like the walrus best because, you see, he was a little sorry for the poor oysters.
He ate more than the carpenter, though. You see, he held his handkerchief in front so that the carpenter couldn't count how many he took, contrarywise.
Oh, that was mean. Then I like the carpenter best if he didn't eat so many as the walrus.
But he ate as many as he could get.
Well, then, they were both very unpleasant characters. But I'd better be getting out of the woods, for really it's coming on very dark. Do you think it's going to rain?
Put up the umbrella, Tweedledee, and see. Oh, yes, there. No, I don't think it's going to rain. At least not under here, contrarywise. Well, may if it chooses. We've no objection, nor how.
Selfish thing. If it did rain, they'd be sure to keep the umbrella to themselves. Well, good night.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Do you see that? What?
Under the tree there.
Oh, it's only a rattle. Not a rattlesnake, you know. Only an old rattle. Quite old and broken.
I knew it. I knew it. It's spoiled, of course.
You needn't be so angry about an old rattle.
But it isn't old. It's new, I tell you. I bought it yesterday. Ah, oh, my nice new rattle. You may want it right under your umbrella, brother. You may well gape and open and close your eyes like a great fish. Oh, you spoiler of rattles.
I didn't. Contrarywise.
Of course you agreed to have a battle. I suppose so. Only she must help us first, you know.
Yes, of course you know.
Wait here, you.
Old Tweedledum and Tweedledee agreed to have a battle.
So the two brothers went off arm in arm into the wood and returned in a minute with their arms full of things, such as bolsters, blankets, hearth rugs, tablecloths, dish covers, and coal scuttles.
Well, I hope you're a good hand at pinning and tying strings. Every one of these things has to go on somehow or other.
Here, you tie this bolster around my neck to keep my head from being cut off.
Really, you'd both be more like bundles of old clothes than anything else by the time you're ready to fight.
You know, it's one of the most serious things that can possibly happen to one in a battle, to get one's head cut off. Here, tie my helmet on.
But this is only a saucer.
Contrarywise, it's my helmet.
Do I look very pale?
Well, yes, a little.
I'm very brave, generally. Only today I happen to have a toothache.
Yeah. No, and I've got a bad headache. Yeah, I'm far more soft than you.
Then you'd better not fight today.
We must have a bit of a fight, but I don't care about going on long. What's the time now?
4:30.
Yeah, let's fight for 6 and then have dinner.
Very well. And she can watch us. Only you better not come very close. I generally hit everything I can see when I really get excited.
And I hit everything within reach, whether I can see it or not.
You must hit the tree pretty often, I should think.
I don't suppose there'll be a tree left standing for ever so far around by the time we finish.
And all about a rattle.
I shouldn't have minded it so much if it hadn't been a new one. He always makes my new one.
Contrarywise, I never.
There's only one sword. You know, brother, but you can have the umbrella. It's quite a shot.
Hmm?
Only you mustn't stick me with it. Promise?
You mustn't cut me with your sword. Promise?
I promise. You promise?
Promise. Then we can begin our battle. We better be quick about it. It's getting darker as it can.
Ooh, darker?
There must be a thunderstorm coming on. Look what a thick black cloud that is, and how fast it comes. But I do believe it's got wings.
Oh, brother, it's a monstrous crow. Hurry!
I wonder, brother.
Wait for me! Wait! Oh, dear, they're out of sight. It's all very well for them. The song says the crow scared them quite away. But the song doesn't say anything about me. What shall I do? What shall I do?
Let's just worry about Alice's predicament over the Christmas weekend. She is in no grave danger and will be able to hide safely away until next Thursday evening at the same time, when we will follow her further adventures through the Looking Glass.
Through the Looking Glass was extracted for radio by William N. Robeson, who also directed the production. The special musical score was composed by Leet Stevens and Paul Sterrett, and Mr. Stevens conducted the orchestra. Alice was played by Miss Helen Clare. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.